I'm Kitty Roach, and I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon.
Hi, Kitty!
You can't hear me? Nobody ever says that to me. Okay. Well, I'm out here because I'm not going to talk another hour on the promises. We're all participating because they're our promises, and we're all in different places around this. So I thought what I'd do is I'm just going to share a little bit about how I came to come across them, and then what I want to do is go through the snazzy little handout here and have people share on the various, I won't say topics, the kind of what is revealed in the promises, where you are with that. And so if nobody raises their hand, then I'm just going to call on you. So I'm not remotely shy. So that's the way it goes. I had been in Al-Anon probably about 12 years when the book From Survival to Recovery came out. And I didn't read it for a year or two because I knew it was about adult children, and I had some prejudices about what that meant. As the adult child of an alcoholic, I really believed that I had no right to blame my childhood on my own, for my own behaviors. And by that time in Al-Anon, I started to realize that, that it's all well and good to know why we behave the way we do and that we use the tools we do, but it has nothing to do with the changes that we make. It's icing on the cake. I use a lot of food references. Can't help it. But it had become very apparent to me that it didn't matter what brought me to this place. What mattered is that I saw the behaviors that weren't working for me and that were hurting others, and that I make an effort to change. And if during that journey I found out about how I came to be that way, that would add an extra depth to my understanding and my progress. I'm going to tell you a quick story. I have a cousin who was 10 years younger than me, and she had a lifelong dream of hiking the Appalachian Trail. And when she was 39, she had actually put the plan in place. Her sister lived in Atlanta, and I live in San Diego, and my cousin was going to send her the food for the pickup spots. I was taking care of the communication. She had a whole big networking site, listserv, that had women hikers on it. She'd prepared for this for a year. And 2 weeks before she left, she died suddenly of a pulmonary embolism at 39. And when my cousin and I flew up, she lived outside of Seattle, when we flew up to go through her things, she had given me her password because I was going to do her email while she was gone. So what was really hard was, not only did I have to get on her listserv and tell these women that had never met her that she had died, but there were a number of things that I read. And one of the things that she had written was, it's the journey, not the destination, which we've all heard, I think, in various ways. But what struck us and gave us comfort is that she had so much fun planning that trip. She had so much fun in the year before. She didn't know she didn't make it. As far as we were concerned, that's where she is, you know. And we all flew back to Georgia, and we hiked to the head of the Appalachian Trailhead, of where it starts. And hiking, let me tell you, I was about 60 pounds heavier, so it was a slow journey. And we sprinkled her ashes, some of her ashes, and we waited till a hiker walked by and took them up on his boots. But the point here is that she lived every moment of that preparation. It was the journey, not the destination. And as far as I'm concerned, that's what the promise of recovery is all about. And that's what the program is all about. You know, serenity and hope, which is our theme, are transient. You know, we're human beings. We might feel serene for 20 minutes, and then, you know, we lose our acceptance and it's gone. But the promise of recovery, not the guarantee of recovery, you know, promise always meant to me that somebody lied. They said they were going to do something and they didn't do it. Okay? So this is a trust issue. But it doesn't say you stand around and, you have recovery. The promise is that you have to do what you're supposed to do. And that's what the promise of recovery is about. I can't sing either, but... So what I'd like to do is read these one at a time and have people share about where you are, how you got there, and anything you'd like to share. Okay? So the first part of this is, if we willingly surrender ourselves to the spiritual discipline of the 12 steps, our lives will be transformed. Anybody done that? Willingly surrender ourselves? And this, you know, is kind of a nice sequel to what Sherry was talking about with progress. Because there'll be some of us are like, you know, not there yet. You know, and that's okay. If we willingly surrender ourselves to the spiritual discipline of the 12 steps, our lives will be transformed. Yes?
Just like any other journey for me, it's a process. And so there are days that I do manage to willingly surrender. There are days when I surrender extremely grudgingly. And then there's the days when I just don't surrender at all. Mm-hmm. So it's not a constant.
Mm-hmm. And when you do have that surrender, do you find your life is transformed?
Yeah, it's easier.
Yeah, it's easier.
It's easier, yeah.
Okay. Anybody else?
Yeah. One of the things I had to learn in looking at these was that grudgingly surrendering doesn't not willing. I don't have to like it. I just have to be willing.
Mm-hmm.
And that in doing that, yeah, my life has been transformed. And I talk about that a lot, that you know, the circumstances of my life haven't changed much. I'm still got the same bizarre kids that we're terrified of. I'm still working in the same crappy place, and I'm still married to the same angry, psychotic woman.
Point of order.
at least that's the way it should be done. And you know, the result of this transformation in my life isn't that any of those things have changed. It's that the way I experience them has changed. And you know, today I love where I work. My kids are not afraid of me, and my marriage is one of the central joys of my life. And that's the transformation that I think is talking about for me.
Thanks. Yes?
I guess I remember back to when I did my step 3 and I've been in Al-Anon for lots and lots of years, as some of my friends know. I remember doing my step 3 and turning my will and my life over to the care of God, because I had no other choice of the way my life was going. And from that day on, it was different. It wasn't easy. It was hard, but I know that my life is in God's hands. So over the years, I've heard people in Al-Anon talk about I have to turn my will and my life over every day. And I don't have to do that. I did that step 3. But I've had to turn over situations that happen in my life. And I think of it from that day. It was like flowing with the river, and I just moved along with it. But I still, you know, there's always situations in life. But that was my moment that life was different. It was hard as I moved on, but it was different.
Thank you, Lorraine. We will become mature, something I always dreaded, responsible individuals with a greater capacity for joy, fulfillment, and wonder. Now, I'm not talking about the responsible persons we were pre-Al-Anon. At least I don't think that's what the promises are talking about. We will become mature, responsible individuals with a greater capacity for joy, fulfillment, and wonder. Hello? Okay, I don't know names. Ah, brave volunteer.
I think for me, the responsible individual is the one that rings the bell, because I used to know what everybody else was supposed to be doing and made sure that they did it, or I tried to control. And now I think I need to let them control their lives and just mind my own business more. It seems to work better with kids.
I don't know about... Yeah, go ahead.
Isn't there yet, but I'm trying.
Right. I know that to me, maturity and responsibility means that I do let go, and that gives me the opportunity to have the capacity for wonder, because I'm not so focused on somebody else. I see it when it comes through, you know. Anybody else?
Able to make decisions or take appropriate actions despite the way I'm feeling. I might have the same feelings as I did before, but even though they're there, I can make a more appropriate decision than I did in the past. And I struggled a lot, and still do struggle with doing the things I truly am responsible for. I tend to like to let things slide, and I'm better at that now than I used to be, and I'm very much aware of it. So to me, those are things to do with maturity and becoming a responsible individual. And like you just said, because I'm not stuck in whatever I was stuck in with those things before, I now have a greater capacity to appreciate all the good things in life.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. This is a really tough one. Though we may never be perfect, continued spiritual progress will reveal to us our enormous potential. Now, I have to laugh at potential, because that's how I picked men. He has enormous potential. And I usually said that sitting in a bar somewhere. Look at him. He has enormous potential. So I laugh about this, because not only do we find out we'll never be perfect, but that we do have potential, and our spiritual progress will reveal to us what that is. Now, I know adult children love this one. Yes?
When I first came to Elena, I didn't realize. I thought trying to be a perfectionist was a good thing. Mm-hmm. And when I got here and realized that that it could be a defect, that was a real eye-opener. Mm. And as a result of that, I gained self-worth that I never had before, and self-esteem, in learning to accept myself as I am and not how I think others think I should be. Mm. That was real spiritual growth. Mm-hmm. And I still have to work on that. I still have to work on that all the time. And I've been in the program a long time. But I thought it was an asset and turned out to be a defect, which in turn has helped me immensely.
Right. How often has that happened as we work the steps? I think, yeah.
I'll talk on that too.
Speak up.
I grew up in an alcoholic home, and I tried so hard to be perfect and normal, and it took a lot of energy. Mm-hmm. I never was perfect, and I drove people away from me in my life. And now through the program, I can see that I have so much more to offer. Mm-hmm. You know, by letting them be who they have to be and who I am. Right. You know, I know who Barb is now. Right. That I'm grateful for. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. Anybody else? Okay. We will discover that we are both worthy of love and loving. We will love others without losing ourselves, and will learn to accept love in return. I used to think that when I controlled other people, it was out of love, because I knew best, and they needed to know that. And what I've learned in Al-Anon, that it was the least loving thing I could do. I didn't allow them to grow. I didn't allow them to find their own path or to make their own mistakes. And by doing that, I completely shut off their own love for me. because it wasn't about love, it was about doing what I said. And how many of us grew up in a home where we didn't ever feel worthy of love because it was so conditional? Yeah.
That still wasn't enough. So it felt like you could never do enough, and it was so frustrating. You could never really bend over far enough for them to love me. Mm. And that, of course, went into my adulthood. It doesn't work.
Why do you think that is?
That's the whole, how can you respect somebody who's a doormat? Mm-hmm.
Thanks. Anybody else? Anybody discovered? Is there anybody who doesn't yet feel worthy of love? Take a risk. Share. Thank you. My favorite, our sight, once clouded and confused, will clear, and we will be able to perceive reality and recognize truth. Courage and fellowship will replace fear. We will be able to risk failure in order to develop new hidden talents. You guys here? No.
Sorry. This just reminds me of a situation that I just had at work. And at first I was feeling like believing what they were saying to me. Like it was like I was really confused. And then as I talked to some of my very good friends, it's like the feedback I'm getting, like because I was telling them my truth. So this is my truth, this is my reality. And so my reality was being based against their perception. And so my choice is I can either spiral down and believe their stuff, or I can walk through that fear, move on to something mm-hmm. else, and realize that my higher power is trying to show me that there's a new way and those talents will be mm-hmm. Developed as I move on, because that fear of moving on is so intense, right? It's like staying in that stuck relationship. Mm-hmm. But because it's familiar, you kind of stay there, whereas to take the risk and to move on and to grow again, I'm thinking, oh, mm-hmm. I don't like this spot, I've been here before. But I know it's always good for me once I move on.
Right.
And take the risk to do that.
So. Mm-hmm. How many people in here have not done something because we were afraid. And I only have one person sharing. I think this is the act as if kind of place, you know, where you do something scared the first time and then nobody dies and you haven't been, well, sometimes you're humiliated, but you don't die from humiliation. At least I haven't so far. I'm a really good trailblazer in that way. I was talking last night about how clumsy I am. And, you know, when you have somebody who's your nurse that's really clumsy, it's not real confidence building, but that's why I don't, you know, I didn't work with IVs and stuff. But I think I was telling Sherry this story. I have a friend that died a few years ago of Lou Gehrig's disease, and I was blessed to be helping him at the last 6 months of his life, and he was at home, and he was in a wheelchair, and had to be fed, and, you know, the whole thing, and the poor guy, I was always spilling something on him or running his wheelchair into things, and, you know, it was just, I mean, it, you know, I give him, go to give him a drink, and the straw would go up his nose. And he said to me in his slow, halting way, you need to embrace that part of you that is awkward and clumsy because you keep trying to make it not so. And you just are. And I realized since then I don't get hurt as much. I just laugh. You know, it's all about being able to accept it. And to me, I just finally make jokes about it now, and I really don't take offense when somebody goes, you know, the hell did you get that bruise? And I go, well, my mind was in the kitchen before my body followed, and I ran into the door frame, you know. I don't know if that's courage or not. I think courage and acceptance are a fine line. So anybody else want to share on that?
There's something I want to say about that, not about my personal clumsiness. I have this sponsor, and she's beautiful, and she's elegant. I mean, physically and spiritually, she's just very beautiful and elegant. And what she was, and she sort of taught me a lot what we've been speaking about so far, the promises, and that was that she would come to me, and she was one of those people, she could ask me to do anything, and I would do it, okay? And she could say anything to me, and I believe her. And she would come to me and ask me to do things, and she would say, love me in all my unlovableness, but she was what I call a lifter-upper of people. And she embodied so much, and I used to believe that if you lifted up people somehow, that diminished you down. Mm-hmm. You know, I felt that, you know, I had to be number one, I had to be at the top. And if you lifted up people, you might accidentally lift them above. And she is not afraid to make people feel loved and worthy, and to give them the courage to do things they might never and that was a real gift of Al-Anon to me from her. And so I have tried very hard now to be an encourager of people, which for me is a sign of maturity, because it meant that it didn't diminish me. And it's a whole lot more fun to help people see their true talents, to help them realize what they really are potentially able to do. And there are things I've done in Al-Anon that I would never have done unless someone said, we're right behind you all the way on this and you can do it. And that has translated over to my professional and personal life as well. And I think that having a better clear-sightedness has enabled me to do that for others as well as and say, you're going to be great, you're going to do this fine, and I'm going to be here for you. It's an amazing gift from the program. Mm-hmm.
I think for risking failure, because we have to learn that it's not just a matter of you might not succeed at first. No, it goes to you will fail for a while, and that's okay. And it will turn out well. And the other side of that is it's been an exercise in relationship building and communication with each other and stretching ourselves beyond the normal confines of our relationship. The idea that I'm supposed to lead as the guy I'm supposed to lead.
Karen's shaking her head.
Yeah. And she gets But that's turned into an encounter with failure. It's turned out well. To me, that's the kind of thing that's cool about.
Right. Yeah, because, you know, I think what we do in our head is, what if I fail instead of what if I succeed? What if I'm good at this? How many, do we ever go there? You know, I'm going to try this. I might be good at it. No.
Actually, I think that sometimes that's what we're afraid of, is what if I succeed?
Ah, good point. Yeah, good point. Fear of succeeding. Our lives, no matter how battered and degraded, will yield hope to share with others. That would be the 12th step. We will begin to feel and will come to know the vastness of our emotions, but we will not be slaves to them. Our secrets will no longer bind us in shame. This is a real biggie. A real biggie. Yeah, Ian.
And not that I had many secrets, but they were just overwhelming. Right? To me, where I was feeling hopeless and ashamed, those secrets really were things that kept me a victim, kept me in the pit, kept me mired, you know. And I just won't let stuff do that to me anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm afraid of going there, and I'm afraid of not being able to open my mouth and speak what I need to say.
Mm-hmm.
And my fear still sometimes prevents me from speaking as early as I'd like to. But it keeps eating away at me and eating away at me until my higher power says, have you had enough? No? Okay. It'll keep eating away at me,
mm-hmm.
and hurting me. Like, it's like when I'm in pain, emotional pain, I know I have to look at me. Something I have to get out.
Mm-hmm.
And that whole idea of not letting your secrets bind you anymore, that secret of not being good enough,
mm-hmm.
right? It's just so liberating.
Mm-hmm. Especially for those of us that look really good on the outside, we keep it all together for people to see, you know, to confess that we actually think we're really awful human beings is really hard. I know why, you know, the first time I did a fourth and a fifth step, I was so scared, and of course I did a crappy one, but it was as far as I could go then. But I think once you do a real fearless and moral inventory in your fifth step, it's hard to be afraid after that, because the relief is so great. Anybody else want to talk about this? How about the beginning to feel and being aware of the vastness of our emotions? Anybody comfortable with that?
Mm-hmm. And anxiety and those emotions, they lose their power over these. Trying to enter into the negative emotions rather than fight them and resist them and bottle them down. So.
Mm-hmm.
That is actually kind of what I was thinking about this morning. I've been kind of struggling with some negative emotions that, you know, I'm aware of them and I feel like, you know, being aware that I have these emotions can be kind of a source of shame. But one of the things I'm coming to realize is that feeling those negative emotions and acting on them, that's two very different things. Mm. And, you know, for me to be able to acknowledge and internalize that is a different thing, and I can be angry and as long, you know, if I process that in a way that doesn't mean that I act it out, then that's probably a healthy thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I for a long time I felt shame that I even feel those negative emotions. Mm. You know, like, you know, I guess that's a sign of the imperfection, right?
Thanks. For some of us who grew up hiding emotions because it was the safe thing to do and not letting anybody, you know, like I told you, I was the good girl. you know, that meant I didn't get to have anything negative or be angry or break the rules or anything. These are, and then the fear of losing control, I think. You know, if I really let myself feel, I'll never get it back. I'll never rein it in. You know, and sometimes I haven't. You know, I'll get testimony from the family on that. But they won't, because I know things about them. As we gain the ability to forgive ourselves, our families, and the world, our choices will expand. With dignity, we will stand for ourselves, but not against our fellows. Serenity and peace will have meaning for us as we allow our lives and the lives of those we love to flow day by day with God's ease, balance, and grace. Kind of what Sherry was saying about, because we help somebody else does not diminish us. My dad has a thing where he says, hooray for me and screw you. And I was like 50 years old and I thought, well, hooray for me doesn't necessarily mean screw you. You know, hooray for me doesn't hurt anybody else. You know, and when I explained that to him, he said, well, yeah, but it doesn't sound as good. But, you know, it was almost like because I rejoice in my own self, somehow that has a negative impact on other people. And I think this is what this is saying. Anybody want to share? Ricky? Because I can read your name tag.
My first thing is I should just sit and listen, but maybe I need to. I think I heard something a while ago. I attend AA, and you know, going through these promises, the fellow made the mention about bullying himself. You know, and that's something that I never even considered. You know, and I have a tendency and I to bully myself because I don't see the behaviors that I'm seeking. And what I've come to learn is if I keep my focus on the behaviors, it affects my recovery. But if I can focus on my recovery, it affects my behaviors.
Ah, oh, well said.
So, that's all I'd say.
Thank you.
When I look at this one, serenity and peace. Serenity is the opposite, I guess, of chaos, and peace is the opposite of war. And so, growing up, to me, the lack of war and the lack of chaos was what I equated with serenity and peace. But the thing is, it really wasn't peaceful and it wasn't serene because you were always waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Mm-hmm.
So there was always that edginess or unease or whatever because you were expecting something to happen. And you never knew when it was going to happen. So even the times that were supposed to be peaceful were not times that you could really enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to work on that constantly, even now. Because, I mean, that's, and somebody explained to me, you know, like I still have problems with the not-so-good things that happen to you. And it, to me, it's like you're peacefully walking along and you step on the rake which, you know, comes up and smacks your forehead. So I'm always, you know, sort of aware of that, that even now I'm looking for, like, what horrible thing can happen, whether it's a snowstorm or, you know, something's going to happen or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But again, that's progress, right?
Exactly.
Not perfection.
Right.
That'll happen, I guess, when I'm in my grave.
Else? Okay. No longer terrified, we will discover we are free to delight in life's paradox, mystery, and awe. We will laugh more. Is there anything better than laughing? Fear will be replaced by faith, and gratitude will come naturally as we realize that our higher power is doing for us what we cannot do for ourselves. I have come to believe that anything that I can laugh at does not scare me anymore. And I flagrantly stole that from an AA speaker. However, after three times, it's mine. That's the rule. Comments? Yeah.
Fear
Mm-hmm. And I think we move back and forth, you know. When I first came into Al-Anon, well, not the first, but the third first, I always keep trying to add that 2 years in the middle because I felt like I didn't completely go away with nothing, but my sponsor won't let me. There were a lot of jokes about Al-Anon's not being funny or not being as much fun as Alcoholics Anonymous, because, you know, you'd hear the laughter in the other room. We shared a meeting. And as I've grown in Al-Anon and with my friends, we've come to realize that it's a different kind of laughter sometimes. You know, the first time I sat with a newcomer at an AA speaker meeting, and the guy was talking about how he got drunk and fell into the Christmas tree, and we're all laughing, and the little newcomer was like, "That's not funny," you know, and trying to explain how things that, or like my Christmas story about my dad passing out, you're right, people don't think that's funny, but we learn to see the humor in life and to look at things in the past in a way that helps us. And that's the higher power working in our lives.
Think about that in terms of the seventh step. Mm-hmm. That same idea you were just talking about when it becomes funny to me. When I can laugh at the thing, the defect of character, suddenly it's no longer controlling me.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else have that experience? Yeah. Wait. I'll try not to trip on the way back.
For myself, I have to walk through a lot of that hurt and stuff that I grew up in to laugh at it now. Because back there as a little kid, and it was scary and it was terrifying. But I'm an adult now.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But when you're in the midst of it, you didn't realize as a kid that my dad was an alcoholic and that was his disease. I just saw him as a very scary figure when he drank.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to come here to find out how to detach, right?
Right.
Him from his disease, just like I do with my spouse and my kids and a lot of others.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not them. And then I can laugh.
Mm-hmm.
But I also have to walk through those steps.
Right. Exactly. My dad always says that by the time they came to the program, my mother had had her sense of humor surgically removed. She loves that part of his talk. Well, it's really true. I mean, we had a lot of laughter in my house, but it became very mean laughter toward the end there. Okay, can we really grow to such proportions? Only if we accept life as a continuing process of maturation and evolution toward wholeness. Then we suddenly begin to notice these gifts appearing. Can we really grow to such proportions? I ask you.
Mm-hmm. Until I finally get it right.
Right.
And I know I'll get it right. But I'm not getting it. I don't get it right on my time. It's on his time.
Mm.
I have to learn from that. These rooms allow me a place to practice in safety and I can take a moment.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I started to have insights about my insights. I was asked to be a speaker, and I had only been in the program for about 2 years, and I've only been in Al-Anon for six years, about five and a half until I finally got a really good place to be. But 2 years in, I was asked to be a speaker, and I remember speaking, and I asked an old-timer who was about 30 years younger than me, to explain what I should be speaking about. And she said, you know, tell where you were and, you know, like, what Al-Anon has done for you, so where you are now. And when I think of it now, I can just cringe almost, except that I've come a further place where I know that I shouldn't cringe because I took a risk, right? But that's exactly what happens. I mean, I haven't lost my sense of humor. I've gained a better sense of humor because I can laugh about some of the things that I thought that I had improved in so much. And I look at it now and I have this insight about those insights, and I don't fall on the floor laughing, but I mean, I could.
Yeah.
It's just unbelievable. So that to me is kind of like a test of are you progressing or not? And sometimes I'll have, you know, a little light bulb go off maybe 2-3 times a week. And more often than not, it's because of somebody that I have gained as a friend through the program, and it's through the fellowship, it's through the casual conversations, the talks, going for coffee after the meeting, and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's the incidental moments, it's not the sort of planned mm-hmm. growth moments.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yes?
The word that grabs me in this one is that it's a process. And sometimes I think I tend to lose my way when I'm not getting anywhere. I seem to be at a real standstill, a stalemate, and then we suddenly begin to notice these gifts. It's like they've been building there for a while.
Mm-hmm.
It's just been something that's been working inside for a while, but it is a process. I know when I come in, I want an instant result.
Right.
Yeah.
Thank you. Anybody else? Time. Okay. We see them in those who walk beside us. They're talking about the gifts. Sometimes slowly or haltingly, occasionally in great bursts of brilliance. Those who work the steps change and grow toward light, toward health, and toward their higher power. Watching others, we realize this is also possible for us. The heart of all 12-step programs. The blind leading the blind. You know? And this, is, I think, speaks to sponsorship as well. Anybody?
I think that passage is the most important in all Al-Anon literature. There's nothing else that quite reaches me that way.
Mm-hmm. And notice it's not in front of us or behind us, it's walk beside us. We're all the same here. Anybody else? Still awake? Okay. Will we ever arrive? Feel joyful all the time. Have no cruelty, tragedy, or injustice to face? Probably not. But we will acquire growing acceptance of our human fallibility, as well as greater love and tolerance for each other. I remember one time I was really stressed and I was talking to my sponsor and she said, "Well, honey, you're only human." And I said, "Well, if you're going to be insulting, I'm hanging up." That's just mean. But, you know, we don't tolerate ourselves being frail. We don't tolerate ourselves not being perfect. And many, many of us have faced terrible things in our program. The death of loved ones, the impact of the active alcoholic. Probably the only group that cheers when somebody gets arrested for drinking. Thank God, now maybe they'll get some help. Anyone share on that?
I think I heard Richard say it earlier, and I certainly espouse it as well. Life keeps happening. Circumstances of life, the circumstances aren't any different. It's just that we have tools to deal with it. We have somebody holding our hand, walking with us through it. We have the support to face it even though we're afraid. It's same potholes are on the journey for all of us. It's just we get some help through them.
Yeah.
And so will we ever arrive and feel joyful all the time? No. It doesn't work that way. But when the bad things happen, we're not pulled down by them as long. And when the good things happen, we tend to be more aware of them. Mm-hmm. So it feels different, but it's not different.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well said. Anybody else?
I guess the fact that there are good things in the bad. Mm. Like the death of my father, I had 4 weeks that I would never spend with him. So mm-hmm. good things do happen.
The seemingly bad and the seemingly good. Right. Okay, and last. Oh, second to last. Sorry, but I always laugh at these because my mother always said that the women in our family were born with a congenital anomaly. Oh. Self-pity, resentment, martyrdom, rage, and depression will fade into memory. Community rather than loneliness will define our lives. We were just talking about community, what that means. So we're all here this weekend. Would that be our community? But I'm from San Diego. How can I be part of your community? Just lucky, I guess. Ain't it the truth? I've had the privilege to be at lots of conferences around all of the United States and Canada, and wherever I go, there we are. And it's an amazing experience. I think Sherry can talk about that too. What about all these self-pity, resentment, martyrdom, rage, and depression? Yeah. Sponsors are a double-edged sword. Look at you, yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. And, the depression here is a small d. We are not saying that you should not seek medical help if you have a big D depression. But the sort of, what I think of this is sort of living below the quality of life that I know I can have. The self-pity, resentment. Although, you know, lots of wonderful things have come from resentments. Most new meetings get started because of a resentment, you know. And I think fade into memory. You know, I hope that I always remember how miserable I was when I lived in one of these every day. I don't want to dwell on it, but I don't want it to fade so far away that when I see a newcomer in pain, that I don't relate to that. And finally, we will know that we belong. We are welcome. We have something to contribute. And finally, for us, that is enough.
And
Right. Right.
It's progress, not perfection.
Right. Yes.
On this last one here, all I ever want is to be validated. And I think that everybody feels that way as well. It just makes you feel understood and welcome, as it says here, and that you can contribute to something where you feel so warm and loved.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's plenty. Thank you for letting me be of service and being here with all of you. All through.